Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me on the line, oh my gosh, the wonderful, the beautiful, the talented medium, Conchetta Bertoldi. How are we doing, my darling?
Oh my God, after that introduction, I'm doing great.
So Conchetta and I met, through our publisher, Greg Brandenburg. He introduced, he told me I had to reach out to Conchetta, and we had to include her in my book, Psychics, Healers, and Mediums, because her book, Do Dead People Watch You Shower, I'm telling you, was one of my go-to grab and go. I think it was 2008 when that came out. And I have to thank you, Conchetta, for continuing to do what you do, but for transforming my belief system from a skeptical journalist into, oh my gosh, she probably does this. Because when I came out to see you in Jersey and I watched you do your thing, oh my God. You are amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. And I have to just tell your listening audience that you're amazing, because I have gotten to know Jennifer Weigel, and what a blessing you are to this universe, I'll tell you right now.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, you know what? More to come from you, because you're just going to keep making us laugh, and you're going to keep writing and inspiring. And, you know, one of the things that you do so well is that people, they just... You hug people. You know, you're the approachable medium. I talk about you're like the empathic medium, but you're also just a hoot and a holler. But you're, you know, the fact that you want to dig deep and help these people, and the way you go at it, you've had this gift since you were a child, and for as long as you can really remember. Go ahead and tell our listeners who haven't dug into your books how this gift came to you, and how you sort of learned to deal with it. It was a little scary for you.
It was, my love, but I was very fortunate. I was born to a really fabulous family. I had a mother and a father from two different ethnic backgrounds, two different religious backgrounds, and they were wonderful people to have as a child, being a medium, because they didn't tolerate any indifference. Everyone was welcome. Everyone was acceptable. They had a beautiful, open heart. So if they had a daughter who had dead people, they just added it to their list of things that they found acceptable. Mm-hmm. And as a child, my father knew better than my mother, because my father's father had the same ability, which would be my grandfather. Mm-hmm. And he knew what to look for, because he was forewarned by my grandfather that I, too, would hear them and work with them.
So now, didn't he look at your mother when she was pregnant and said, guess what?
Yes, my grandfather did that, but he said it in Italian. And my mother spoke English and German, mm-hmm. and my father spoke English and Italian.
Okay.
So when my father's father, who spoke very broken English, he said it in Italian to my father.
Got it.
But my mother, as she was very intelligent, and she learned how to speak Italian just from being around them.
Mm.
But the thing is, my father said my mother was petrified of this, because she was raised in a horrific orphanage, a Catholic orphanage, that this kind of thing, you know, was frowned upon, and it was not acceptable. So she was scared in the beginning, also was mistreated in that orphanage. Mm-hmm. So she said to me later in life, I decided to take on Daddy's beliefs, because she figured anything had to be better than the way she had been treated as a child.
Right, by people who are supposedly, you know, serving God in a Catholic facility.
There you go, Jen. Mm-hmm. There you go. That's exactly right.
Right.
And as a result, she never held it against God. She said they were just human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And they, unfortunately, she said, were very frustrated human beings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, so your mom... Oh, actually, I should say fortunately. So your mom decided then, because she had this terrible childhood where she wasn't loved unconditionally, she then became the most loving mother.
Oh, my God. She was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
She was the mother, I should say, that was totally unconventional. So she was no Donna Reed. She was no Doris Day. She was the one who said, do you want to know how it feels to get hit in the face with a pie? And she'd fill up a tin with whipped cream, and pow, you got the whipped cream pie in your face, because she figured, I'm not depriving my children of anything.
That's
they
so want to
feel and go through life. I'm going to be the one to help them do it. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't going to let us be afraid of anything.
But then, you know what? You're 15. You got afraid of this stuff, too. I mean, this was a little freaky.
Well, you have to remember, my mother didn't hear dead people.
Right.
That was the difference. Yeah. I heard dead folks, and mm-hmm. she was accustomed to me telling her there were things around, and she had a memory that she used to always talk about, which was her first real understanding of what her daughter was going to be living with, and that was, I came in the door at about 5 years old, and I told her that Uncle Jerry's leg was gone and that it was bloody. Now, Uncle Jerry is my mother's brother, and the phone rang as I was saying this, and it was my aunt telling my mother that my uncle was in a motorcycle accident, and they were asking for permission to amputate his leg.
Oh,
and my aunt was asking my mother what she should do.
Oh, my God.
So, obviously, my mother at that point, that's, you know, it scared her. She didn't know it was going to involve stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Totally. So then she of course, is used to it more and more because it's happening to you more and more. But the real big kind of kicker was as you got older, you were in high school, and you're trying to sleep, and there's a party of dead people in your room.
Yeah, you got it. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I didn't turn off my cell phone. I should have done that. Forgive me.
Pausing for cell phone.
There you go. There
marking.
I'm sorry, what was your question, babe?
Okay, so then you get to be a teenager, and you're trying to sleep, and there's a party of dead people in your room.
That's correct. I was probably, you know, it's hard for me to recall, but I think I was around 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time of any little girl's life, especially being brought up in New Jersey, all you want to do is where I wanted to do anyway, was wear lipstick, heels, a leather jacket, and go out and find boys. Or I should say a peace sign,
mm-hmm.
because that was a real time I grew up. But
right.
Anyway, long story short, I woke up one night, and I was in my bedroom, and I saw all these dead folks around me, and they were with there was flowers everywhere, and I could smell the flowers, and they were all talking to me. I later found out that what they were really doing was asking me to help them, and if I would, basically, if they could recruit me to deliver messages.
Mm.
And I was so frightened because obviously I knew they were dead, and I wanted to be normal like all the other girls at my age and were growing up. So I started to just lay in bed, and I was so frozen, I couldn't get to the light switch,
mm-hmm.
and or to the door. So I was calling for my parents. Literally screaming. So the next thing I knew, the light went on, and my father and mother were standing at the doorway and saying, "What's the matter?" And then I was telling them in a very fast speed, you know, what had just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And my father knew what was happening, but he then realized he had to help me to make a decision, either do what they wanted, which is to require that I would deliver messages for them, or I would choose not to, and they would go away.
Mm-hmm. And how could you make them go away?
Well, it was very easy, and I was told by my dad, whenever you don't want anything around you having to do with the other side, you call God into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was saying, in the name of God, be gone. Mm-hmm. In the name of God, be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me to do that. I did that, and I said it probably a million times in the course of that night alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was never heard them again for a long, long time. Well, it seemed like an eternity anyway,
mm-hmm.
because I wished them away and told them I wasn't interested,
mm-hmm.
until probably around, I'm going to say I was really probably around 21 or 22.
Right.
When I started to date this guy who was very into John Edwards.
Edgar Casey, you mean?
Casey, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Casey,
mm-hmm.
Not John Edwards, right. Edgar Casey. And somebody I had never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking to myself, oh, my God, Edgar Casey? He had this ability? Who was this man? And then what I really learned was this person that I was dating, he knew I had this ability. He mm-hmm. saw signs that there were things that were happening, that he understood it. So he tried to educate me. But at the same time, I realized later now that he was a municipal bond salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he was on the up and up, but anyway, yeah. So I was naive, and slowly he introduced me to Edgar Casey, and I went to Virginia, where there's an institute dedicated to him.
Oh, sure.
Those days, they tested people, and I was tested, and I remember them telling me that I was narrowed down to one of, like, they had started out the testing with, I don't know, maybe 50 people, and then it was down to, like, 3 people, myself and 2 others.
Wow.
They told me I was classified. As this. Yeah.
And so you had to sign some documents and you went off to the government. No, I'm kidding. Then what happened?
Well, it's a really weird thing. You know, I remember getting letters at that time of my life from places that I remember my parents, and never saw them afraid of anything.
Mm-hmm.
But wherever I got letters from, you know, offering to educate me or whatever, I don't know. All I know is my mother and father ripping them up and saying, "You're not interested. You're not interested."
Right. Sure.
And I later in life, I remember reading books on, like, I don't know if you ever heard of they used to call them remote viewers.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that our government knew all about this ability, and they had people that were in the service that they were training to do remote viewing. I mean, I found it intriguing to read about these soldiers that, you know, became remote viewers and how their lives were forever changed once they understood that what they were doing and how easy it was. Anyway, long story short, I don't know if that's what I was getting letters about back then. I was very young, but I do remember that my parents were dead set against whatever people were offering me any way, shape, or form help.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. There are programs that have been documented by people who are coming forward and saying, hey, I was a part of this program that the CIA was, you know, in charge of, where they would try to find the bad guys by sitting in a chair. And, you know, Men Who Stare at Goats is the movie that they made sort of based on the concept with Jeff Bridges. But that whole concept of I can close my eyes and I can picture Afghanistan and find the bad guys.
Right.
And, you know, this just goes to show that time and space is sort of this irrelevant, even in the government. They believe we can have these, some people better than others, but all of us have some sort of intuitive sense, but some of them take it to the next level. And you are one of those people where you have it clairaudiently, right? You hear it,
yes.
You see it, you feel it. Do you ever get like the physical symptoms of someone who's been
yes.
sick? Explain
yes.
what happens to you when you're around a spirit.
Oh, it's uncomfortable because you know you're not feeling that before you're dealing with this client. Mm-hmm. So you know it has something to do with the client. And in the middle of it.
Right.
So it's hard to explain because they're always different. And in some ways, I can feel shortness of breath. I can feel heaviness on my chest. Mm-hmm. I can feel dizzy. It's very hard to explain. But at the moment it's happening to me, it's like I'm easily able to verbalize it.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I were to say it now, it doesn't come to me real easy. But at the time I'm doing work with a client, mm-hmm. it comes to me like quickly, like, oh, I can tell I'm definitely lightheaded, or you know what I'm saying? These things.
Yes.
Yeah,
wow.
It's not fun, but these are types of, and I don't want that, so I ask them not to show that to me. Like, see, in the work that I do, I make sure that I have some ground rules with them.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might think this is strange because they would say, well, why wouldn't you want to see the person? Well, why would anybody not want to see a dead person? I don't want to see a dead person.
Right.
So, I mean, it's overwhelming. It's frightening. It's scary when you see somebody before you. I mean, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind hearing them in the way that I do hear them because I've heard them my whole life. But as I got older, I got uncomfortable with seeing, especially now at this stage in my life, because, you know, when you're in menopause, you're already compromised. So the last thing you want to do is add some spirit walking by you. So I choose and I tell them I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you pull God into it,
right.
you have that force with you always.
Yes. And so for you, you're God faith, but it's not like a Christian necessarily. You believe in all religions.
I do. I believe in all religions.
Mm-hmm.
I think they all have something beautiful to bring to the table,
mm-hmm.
so long as they don't go around spouting, my God is better than your God, and you got to die because of it.
Right.
But I do favor only because, I mean, I was never raised, like I never made my communion, I never made my confirmation, but I do celebrate Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that Christ is the Son of God. But I'll tell you, how I look at that, I believe Jesus was a very highly evolved, a spirit master, a spirit. There's so many mission entities, so many things about Jesus walking on earth. But you must remember that I believe, and I don't believe I have the right to shine God, Jesus' shoes. Let me make that clear. But I also believe I'm a daughter of God. I believe you're a daughter of God.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, Jesus was the Son of God. In what capacity, how we become higher evolved spiritually, I don't have all the answers to that. I really don't know. Mm-hmm. I only know that I think that God, Jesus was a very highly amazing, highly evolved spirit,
mm-hmm.
and he walked on earth. And obviously, look, 2,000 years ago, we're still talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I just think there's a lot of beautiful religions out there, though, and there's so many of them that I love to celebrate because they all have in common to do unto others the way you would want somebody to treat you. It's
mm-hmm.
common, as easy as that. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. And, you know, I've been around now the world interviewing different mediums and psychics and healers and compiling the data. And I tell people, look, I'm not telling anyone what to believe. They can believe what they want, but I'm going
right.
to put the evidence out there. And
right.
when I went to the first event that I witnessed that you do these events in New Jersey, and I was sitting there and the woman next to me started talking to me, and I could tell she was just grief stricken. I thought, oh, she must have just lost a child. And she told me, I said, oh, why are you here? And she said, I lost my son. He had a brain tumor and he was only 7 years old. And I thought, how did she get out of bed? And then when she shared, it was 22 years ago. I thought, for 22 years, this woman was sad, and I want, So I sat there. Now, you know, at this point, this was a couple of years ago when you and I first met, and my dad had been on the other side about 15 years, and he's always blabbing through mediums. Now that I do this for a living, he's a mic hog, okay? He's always like, hey, so I'm like, all right, listen here, Tim. If you're up there, I want you to find this boy. I want you to get this boy. And if this boy is afraid, whatever, find the soul of this child and bring him to his mother. I want your help. I know you know how to do this. Go find him. I don't know where you have to look under every nook and cranny, but go to the playgrounds and find the 7-year-old right now.
Right.
I was praying like I was crazy. So then you get over and you're kind of in front of us and you look right to the lady and you went, and when you feel the energy of a spirit, it's like you go, she says, oh, I've got a boy here. I've got your son. You know, and you say, who's David? And she says, that's my son. And then I got goosebumps, and then she gets goosebumps, and then you get goosebumps, and boom, you bring this message through. And it was so powerful. And I could just feel the weight lift off her shoulders like an anvil just disappeared, right?
Yeah.
And it was so moving. And then afterwards, she shared with me just her relief that knowing, she says, that the phone lines are open. Yeah. I know he's watching over me, and I know he's watching over his siblings, too, because you brought those up. You brought up the siblings. And the power of the message that you delivered to this woman in just about, 4 minutes, it was like boom, 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 and you just knocked her down like a bowling pin. You know what I'm saying? Like in a good way. Like you're walking around the room going, and you, and you, and you. And it's so energizing and it's so healing. I know that you helped that woman greatly, and you do that every time you do an event, and that's what it's about. It's about that the grief can really, really freeze people from moving forward in their lives. And it can
grief,
stop them.
Like, amazing. Yeah. Guilt is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, you have to understand that people carry these things around with them. Listen, I was thinking about this the other day when I was listening to those poor girls who were molested by that piece of crap from the Olympics, that doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now you listen to those girls, and some of these things happened to them 10 years ago, and they're still like it just happened yesterday.
Right.
I mean, and the rest of their lives, they're going to carry this around. So we in human, what I'm trying to say is we in this human form that we are in are experiencing so many things. And we have choices and we have decisions to make always, every day, and how we're going to go forward. So if I can help somebody to feel better who's carrying around guilt or pain and sorrow, oh, my God, who wouldn't want to do that?
Right.
Who wouldn't want to make somebody feel better? Because, you know, when you walk by somebody on the street, you just pass them. You don't know what they're carrying around.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what, until somebody opens up or gets up to the microphone and says, you did this to me, Larry, that doctor, that is, because one of these poor girls, you know, and how they'll never forget. You would never know to look at them. They're young and beautiful and vibrant. You don't know what they're carrying. Or somebody comes to one of my shows and I put the microphone in front of them and they said, yes, that's my son. He was 70. You don't know what kind of pain these poor people are carrying. But who would not want to help somebody?
Right.
And you say to me, oh, yeah, well, you're known as the huggy medium. You're absolutely right, because I've worked with other mediums, and I am appalled at seeing some of my colleagues who, you know, don't leave the stage.
Right.
They work from the stage, or they have this look on their face like, you know, I want to do this for you, but I don't want you to touch me. Mm-hmm. That will never be me.
Right.
I think it's terrible, and I don't know how anybody could feel that way, because a hug is for free. You know, telling somebody you're going to be all right is a beautiful thing, and if you do it with your physical emotion, people connect to that. So, my God,
yeah.
I could get crazy on that alone. You know what I'm saying?
It's true. Yeah. And also, too, I was talking with Dr. Mary Neal, who she died in a kayaking accident, and she had a near-death experience, and she talks about these little nudges. It's like they're not full-blown in-your-face miracles, but they're these little breadcrumbs left by God that help you go from here to there. Can you tell our listeners the story of you recently were at a dinner party, and somebody was talking about how they lost the diamond? Do you remember that one?
I'm trying to refresh my memory.
So,
oh, yes, yes, yes,
okay.
I do remember. Yes,
okay.
Yes. Okay. So I was at a dinner party, mm-hmm. and there was two people talking about things that they had lost and how they got them back. So mm-hmm. the diamond one was this lady had a diamond given to her in a ring. Mm-hmm. And it was, I believe it was her grandmother's ring, a diamond engagement ring. Anyway, she was wearing the ring and lost a stone. Mm-hmm. She was devastated. And her husband said to her, "Don't worry, we have insurance, we'll replace it." And she said, "I don't want a different diamond. That was her diamond, and I want hers." So she ran off to church, and she was praying and praying, Saint Christopher, and every saint she could think of to please return the stone, which I totally agree with. That's great. I personally call the loved ones I have on the other side.
Right.
But anyway, I call them my God squad. Mm-hmm. So she's praying and praying, and in the church, she looks down, and she finds a penny. Mm-hmm. Well, she picks the penny up, and she puts it. She said she had a shirt on with a pocket in the front of it. So she put the penny in the pocket that she was wearing, and then she went home, and she felt so bad because she just was so thinking she was never going to find this diamond, and what are the odds, right? Mm-hmm. She said she was in her kitchen, and she bent down to pick something up, and the penny fell out of her pocket, mm-hmm. and it rolled across the floor, and slowly she bent down to look where the penny was to pick it back up, and it landed somewhere under the stove, mm-hmm. and she said, and where it landed, right next to the penny, was the diamond.
Under the stove. Yes.
Unbelievable, right?
Wow.
I know. There was another guy at the same table who was talking about an aunt who lost her, apparently it was a diamond ring or some kind of ring. I don't know whether it was diamond or not. Just a very special ring. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't find it anywhere. And she was praying that she'd find it, and she never found it. So she said that they were, she was having a holiday, right? So she was making the holiday. All the relatives were coming over. And then at the dinner table, she was talking about this, how that she never did find that ring, and it was somebody that gave it to her, too, had passed, and who loved the holidays, this, that, the other thing. My friend, who is a doctor, he's sitting there, and he said, "Conchetta, I went to take some cranberry sauce out of this dish. The dish was like a crystal bowl, mm-hmm. and I went to bite into it, and there was a crunch. I was like, what the heck is this? The ring was in the bowl that she put the, she didn't even pay attention. She took the bowl out, put the cranberry sauce in the bowl, never realizing the ring was in that bowl, and this man was now taking some cranberry sauce, and it was in his mouth, the ring.
Thank God he didn't swallow it.
I know, thank God, right?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah,
wow.
I know. But you can't make this stuff up. And the reason he brought that up is because this woman shared that story, and it almost ignites other people to share their stories about what they also live and see in testimonies.
That's right. And that's where you kind of go, there is something bigger. They do want us to make choices where we feel loved and supported, but we also have free will. And that's the part that gets a little messy, right? So
yes.
I've been at some of your events where there's a child, or I would say not a child, maybe a teenager or someone in their early 20s who accidentally overdoses, right? And there they find themselves on the other side, and their grieving family left behind going, what could I have done differently? How could I have helped him make different choices? And they say, at least the couple that I've witnessed, I take full responsibility. I did this. You did not do this to me. I chose this.
Yes.
And I chose poorly. And I am so sorry I chose this.
Yes, 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 yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, they always come back. But the thing that they want people to know also, and I mean, again, I'm not making light of somebody taking their own life, but they want people to know they were met by love.
Right.
And that God and so many other loving souls were there to help comfort them. Because they realize immediately they made a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they are met with unconditional love. So, you know, it's kind of like, how do I say this? How about you are home, mm-hmm. and your mother and father don't like the boy you're dating.
Right.
And the boy is really, really not good, not a good person. And your mother and father see it clearly, and they're warning you, warning you, warning you. Mm-hmm. So what do? You say, nope, going to do what I want to do anyway. And you marry the guy.
Right.
And within a year, you're in this terrible situation, and it gets so bad. And you don't want to even say anything to your mother and father because you know they're going to look at you and say, hey, we told you, mm-hmm. but you don't. But eventually, you have to divorce, and you go back to your parents, who you were mad at because they didn't understand, I love him.
Right.
So now what happens? You open the door not knowing what to expect, and what do you see? Your mother and father going, it's all right, sweetheart. We understand. We've all made mistakes. It's going to be okay.
Right.
You're going to move on from here. It's kind of like that.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
And you will. You will move on from there, mm-hmm. from on the other side. They will help you to move on.
Now, in your day-to-day, what would you say is one of the most common themes that you get all the time from your clients that walk in?
Guilt.
Guilt.
overwhelming guilt. They're riddled with it, riddled with it. Mm-hmm. And they say things to me like, oh, my God. I mean, I had somebody this morning. She said to me, oh, my God, she was this poor woman. I couldn't imagine what she was so guilty about. I'm thinking, did she not get along with her mother? Was she mean to her mother? But then as I listened to her mother showed me with her at her bedside. Mm. So I'm thinking to myself, well, she was at her bedside. Okay, so I'm listening. And then her mother's showing me that the daughter is feeling this tremendous guilt. I've come to realize the daughter was at her mother's bedside for 3 weeks, day in and day out, while her mother was dying.
Wow.
She went home, fell asleep, set the alarm, and slept past the alarm. And what do you think her mother does while that happens?
Of course.
So she has tremendous guilt that she wasn't there with her mother when her mother died.
Oh, sure.
And says this to me, and hysterically, too. Mm-hmm. So I said to her, honey, listen to me, sweetheart. You have to remember your mother and you had a long life together.
Mm-hmm.
She wants you to remember the whole life, not that minute in time.
Right.
That you should not be judged for. That's number one. Number two, and you were a wonderful daughter. Number two, she didn't want you to be there when she left. Because in that state that she was in, and she was in a coma, I said she was half in and half out. She could still see you and know your presence was there. She knew if she left at that moment, because they were calling her already to come home,
mm-hmm.
that she was going to see you in total despair.
Right.
So when you got up and left the room to go home, take a shower, or get some rest, whatever it may be, she decided, okay, I'm going to leave now. And she was happy because she, when you found out she was still with you, but you weren't sitting at her bedside and she didn't feel like she was betraying you and leaving you. And you she got up and left that horrible body that was terribly sick and not going to get well.
Right.
And then she walked into this paradise where they said to her, don't worry, you've come home. You're not going to be taken from your daughter. Look, here she is. You can comfort her from this side. And she found that all out.
Right.
But you're beating yourself up, for not being there for that last second.
In fact, most spirits want to be alone. They don't want company when they're going to go make that transition.
No, because they know that you are sitting there, and they know, not that I'm saying people shouldn't sit there. I'm not saying
that. Of course, yeah.
I'm saying that they know the pain of their loved ones is watching this.
Right.
They know that. And,
yes.
And every one of us who loves somebody, we know that feeling. We don't want to cause anybody we love pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
Right.
And that's the thing, too. Do you believe that everybody attends their own funeral?
Yes, of course. I do. Yes, I do. Well, because once we leave our body, we become one with the Spirit of God.
Mm-hmm.
And when we become one with the Spirit of God, we have the same. We are, okay, think of it this way. God is at all places at all times. I didn't corner the market on God, so he's only here with me in New Jersey. He's also in Japan right now. He's also in all through the world. Everywhere you can think humans exist, that's where God is.
Right.
So now, knowing that God can be in all places at all times, realize that when we die, we leave this Tupperware container we're existing in, and then we become one with the Spirit of God, and we can also, from what they tell me, have the same type of, not I want to say power, but ability. We can be at all places. So if a woman passes away and she has a son in New Jersey and a daughter living in Germany, she can be with both.
Right.
It's just not something we can understand. We're limited. We're in human form. It's very hard for us to comprehend this.
Yeah, I interviewed a gentleman, Dr. Jeffrey Long, who started the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation, and he interviewed a woman who had no eyesight, but when she had her near-death experience, she had 360-degree vision.
Yeah,
and it was like,
amazing?
So she comes back and she explains how she was seeing everything in the front and the back and the sides, and he was like, I got news for you. That's not how it works down here. And she was like, what? What a bummer.
Yes, like, that's so true. I remember one time in one of my books I wrote about this, I had a lady who came to me, and she had a little boy. He was 5 years old. And this little boy, apparently from the moment he was born, was just like a godsend. He was beautiful. He was sweet. He had kindness and love for mankind. It was just amazing. And she said he was never able to walk. He lived in a wheelchair, and it broke her heart. They didn't think he was going to live past one. Mm-hmm. And she used to, but he lived till he was five. Anyway, she took him to the thing he always wanted to do was go to the park.
Mm-hmm.
So she would take him in his wheelchair down to the park, and it used to kill her to take him because he'd sit in the wheelchair all excited and all happy for the children as he saw them running and playing on all the seesaws, swings, the this, the that. And he would sit there and just gleefully love their excitement that they were able to run and do these things. Mm-hmm. And it would kill her. She said he used to kill me because he couldn't join in. And she said they would run by him like he wasn't even there. They wouldn't even notice him, and it used to break her heart. But she said he never seemed to mind and never seemed to notice. But the day he died, she said he was horizontal. He was in his hospital bed, and she said he was in a coma. And all of a sudden, he opened his eyes, and he looked at his mother, and he said to her, "Mommy, they told me now I can do anything I want. Mm. I can run. I can jump. They told me I'll be able to do everything." And 2 seconds later, he was gone.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, that one always stayed with me. You know, they don't all stay with me, you know, Jen, because I hear so many things, and right. I have to try to write them down, especially when we're working on a book, mm-hmm. because I hear so many of these things. But that one just always stayed with me.
For sure.
That one, and I had a woman last week that I love this one. She said her father didn't raise her. Mm-hmm. Her stepfather raised her, and she loved her stepfather, and she wanted to hear from her stepfather. So I'm doing this reading, and I'm getting all this information, and the father and the stepfather were side by side. They were both dead. Mm-hmm. We're talking about her little boy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know what I said that made her say this, but this is what she told me. Her son was, I think he was 5 or 4 years old, and she said he was telling her that he loved his grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
She thought that he meant her father.
Mm-hmm.
The biological father.
Right.
And she said, well, he didn't know either one of them, by the way.
Right.
But she said, I thought he meant my biological father. And I was asking him questions. How do you know him? Well, whatever. So whatever she said, he looked at her and he said, no, not him. And she goes, who? And he walked over to a photograph of the stepfather.
Mm.
Said, him. So she goes, oh, you know him? And he said, yes. Now, again, he never knew him on this side. Mm-hmm. He was dead, that stepfather, when the little boy was born. So she goes to him, well, where did you talk to him? How did you talk to him? Where? Mm-hmm. So she said he looked very puzzled, like he didn't have the words to say it.
Mm-hmm.
So he simply pointed his finger up to heaven, and he went, up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that, because it's out of the mouth of babes, you know. He didn't have the vocabulary to mm-hmm. say, oh, on the other side of the veil, Mom, because, you know, we don't die. He didn't say
right.
all that.
Right.
I mean, he's 5. He's very limited. And the simplest terms a child could say, she said, he innocently just poked his finger up mm-hmm. and went up there.
And how lovely that he called him Grandpa, so that the stepfather
oh, yeah.
really did take the daughter as his own.
Yes. Oh, well, he did. And mm-hmm. then that was what she said. He used to tell everybody, you know, she's mine. She's my daughter. Like, she adored him. And there was reason for it, because he deserved it. He earned it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And as a stepmother myself, believe me, I love that story.
And true. That's what I was going to say. Because you prayed and prayed and prayed and tried to have your own biological
yep.
child. And sometimes we have these prayers, and we mm-hmm. pray till our knees are bloody, and it doesn't right. work out the way we think it is. In fact, Dr. Mary Neal shares in her book, To Heaven and Back, that she wanted her parents, when she was a kid, to get back together. She would pray to God, please let them get back mm-hmm. together. But then she ends up getting this stepfather who comes into her life and is such an incredible joy. And
yep.
you have a story like that with your Jessica.
I do. I absolutely do. I got Jessica when she was 9 years old, and my husband was married before.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to have children in vitro, fertility surgery, lost a baby. Nothing was working. I was totally miserable and totally angry at God.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell this to people because I want them to know I was angry too. I'm as human as you are. But the other side was saying, no, let it go. You'll be all right. Let it go. And I just didn't want to let it go, because I figured, hey, why if I let it go? I'm, you know, giving in to you, whatever. Anyway, long story short, I was able to see what I had instead of what I didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
This little 9-year-old, who was the biggest little brat you ever saw at that age, and she was always 9 going on 30, and made my life miserable, because I really didn't have any rights. I couldn't discipline her. She wasn't my child. I had no rights at all. But the amazing thing is that child today is 44, and I'm sorry, she's 46. Oh, my God, she'd be so happy to hear me say that. she is 46, and she truly is, like one of the biggest loves of my life.
Mm.
How do I prove that to you? She's also executor of my will.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that doesn't come easy. And somebody's got to really be special, you know. But she really is, and I'm so grateful, because I really do have a daughter.
Mm-hmm. You do. And John, your husband, didn't know about your gifts for the first year of your marriage.
Nope, did not. Did not. Well, if you read my first book, and yes. I can tell you that, you know, my mother-in-law is not, she's not a fan of mine. She doesn't like me, I'm sorry to say. And I feel bad about it to this day. She's 96. But I will say that I was afraid to tell him because I knew they had enough things that his mother didn't like about me. Mm-hmm. And
you wanted to keep this entire fact that you see dead people a secret. But after a while, you know, John's starting to wonder what the heck's going on. You're sneaking out of the house.
He thought I was cheating on him, Jen.
He thought you were cheating.
We went to a funeral. My uncle passed away, and my cousins were coming over and asking me if and what my I was hearing from the other side.
Right.
That their father had passed away, and he saw me whispering to them.
Right.
And he thought that I was, because we were not in a good place at those days because there was such havoc in our marriage with my mother-in-law, you know, sadly made it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that I was cheating. So in marriage counseling, when the therapist said, tell John what everybody else knows that he doesn't seem to know, he was ready for me to say, well, I'm leaving you, there's somebody else.
Right.
And when I said to him, you know, I hear dead people, he went, oh, great. he was like, oh, wonderful, you know, but that wasn't what he expected to hear. But that wasn't much worse or better, I guess, to him at that time.
Oh, yeah. And he was didn't believe in any of this at first.
No, when I met him, I remember, because it was very important to me, I believe in God. And I remember saying to him, well, you know, when we talked about religion or whatever, he actually said to me in those years, well, I guess I should just tell you I'm an atheist. I've decided. Now, this is a real Catholic boy who was raised to make his communion, his confirmation, you know, all of the above.
Right.
And he said to me, I've decided I'm an atheist. And I remember I was like, oh, the gasp was like, oh, my God. But he's a really wonderful man, and he does the right thing. He's an honest, you know, trustworthy, incredible person.
Oh, yeah.
Sadly, just very scientific. But now he will tell you, you know, we've been together a long time. I make him pray with me. Now, he won't say the whole prayer, but I get him to finish it, like just say to him, okay, repeat after me in the name of God, hear my prayer. And he'll say that. And he will now, I've seen him when we belong to a club. I'm doing a big benefit for them, as a matter of fact, this Saturday, Unico, it's Italian-American Club. And at the beginning of every meeting, we salute the flag, and we also say a prayer because we have dinner together, this club. And at the prayer, it's like almost, it's a very Christian-sounding like prayer, and he knows it better than me. I don't know how to do that. So he sits there, and whenever we go anywhere where there's a real Christian, you know, thing that they're doing,
right.
He knows it all. I'm the one who doesn't know it. So I find it very beautiful that I look up to God and I say, don't worry, Lord, he's with you, honey. He's one of yours.
He's transformed.
I mean?
He's transformed.
Exactly.
And I also want to talk about, too, your experience in the power of prayer, because you've had, I mean, you talk very openly about your belief in God, but that you've actually felt it physically make a difference with you, like when you have a panic attack. Would you mind sharing that story for us?
Not
when
at all.
You were flying?
I love sharing it, Jen, because if it can help somebody else. First of all, huge, huge person who believes in prayer. Prayer is like liquid gold, honey. I have to say, even in my own home, I got a very beautiful gift from my friends in Mexico, a statue of Mary. It's sterling silver. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And John and I bought a mantle, so we have it in our living room, and it's almost like a little, well, I guess it's my little church. But anyway, I know that prayer can help you in every capacity, as simple as finding your keys to helping you to give comfort to somebody else and somebody who's sick. Listen, can they heal somebody? I don't know how far that can go because there might be things out of our control. Mm-hmm. I only know give it a shot. And as far as panic attacks go, I have been sadly known to suffer from panic attacks because of all of the use I use with my subconscious mind. My subconscious mind is easy for me to delve into it and fluctuate back and forth from conscious mind to subconscious mind. And in there is last memories of past lives and all sorts of things. And I also take it to heart, all these terrible, ugly stuff that's on the news.
Sure.
I mean, I'm really not a person who should listen to this stuff.
You're an empath, so you sponge it all in.
I do. That's why I stick with Roseanne 24/7. On But anyway, so I usually use prayer. Like, I'll be, in the name of God, enter my body, fill my body with the Holy Spirit, fill me with all the hierarchy angels, take away this panic, take away this fear. In the name of God, hear this prayer. I mean, I could go on and on and on. but I know that it works for me, mm-hmm. and I know it will work for other people. I try to tell folks, especially with panic attacks, what you want to do is change the station.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're on a station of panic, always have a memory that is one, this works too, mm-hmm. that has a memory of something that was wonderful for you. I have one that was when I was 20 years old. It was a place I was with, a person I was with, and I, in my mind, start to decorate the room and feel the feeling of the things that were in the room and the sounds and all of the things that came with that experience. And it takes my mind away from my fear.
Right.
And it's like changing the station, just change the channel. And it really does, it does work. Believe me, it can be very successful if you want it to be.
That's true. You know, I was recently in a place, it was super haunted, and you shared some stories with me about when you went on vacation and you felt a place that had kind of a dark energy and mm-hmm. a heaviness to it. And so for anyone who's listening, if you're staying in a place that just doesn't feel right, you feel like you got a terrible night's sleep, there's cold breezes, chances are there are some energies there that are stuck. These are spirits mm-hmm. that are roaming around and trying to get your attention and cause some trouble. You went to the Sound of Music Mansion. Von Trapp family mansion story.
Salzburg, Austria.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a dream of mine all my life.
Mm-hmm.
Always wanted to go to Salzburg. Always wanted to go to the Von Trapp family home. First of all, I'm totally amazed at what happened in Europe when that terrible period of time of Hitler took over. And I think that I lived at that time. I mm-hmm. think that I lived and died there at some point. So for me to travel to those places, it's overwhelming, but it also brings back some sort of, I don't know what, I can't know what to say, how to put it into words. All right, so I went to visit that home, and I mm-hmm. spent the night there. And during the in the night, two times, one night I was woken up by something falling over in my room, like I heard a thump.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, because I was already traveling all day, we finally got to bed. I said, you know what, it's probably one of the suitcases. I'll figure it out in the morning. I'm not going to worry about it.
Right.
When I got up the next morning, nothing had moved. Nothing mm-hmm. fell over. Nothing had moved. So I went, okay, we're going to try to overcome that, right? But then the next night, I got pushed violently in my leg, mm-hmm. and I heard a very loud German voice, and it was a male figure, and I heard a very tail end of, y'all fall, stop, oh, whatever.
Something oh, boy.
German, right? And I just remember, because I woke up and I went, what the hell is that? And I look over at John and he's sound asleep, not right. even a stirring, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I went on to find out that who took over the home when the Von Trapp family fled mm-hmm. was none other than Heinrich Himmler. That he used that as his headquarters.
Was he the second or third in command or something?
Second. He was right under Hitler.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And that was where he lived. That was his headquarters. So I'm not saying it was him I heard,
right.
but certainly one thing I know for sure is the church took that home over when the Von Trapp family sold it, the church bought it,
mm-hmm.
and they had the Vatican go in and do an exorcism there three or four times.
Wow.
And that they were also did that because the nuns and the priests that were staying at this home, you know, and using it for whatever the church was using it for, they were all sightings of Germans walking around the grounds and walking in the house, and they mm-hmm. heard the heels of the... And on the property, there was, during the time of the war, because the house was sat on many, many acres of property, there were all pup tents and shelter in the back where all the German soldiers were all staying there.
Mm.
So, you know, there's a lot going on there.
Oh, there's some truth to the vibration of a place where, you know, I mean, you walk into a gym, you don't feel like sitting down and meditating. You know, you
right.
feel like moving. There's a vibration and an order. Well, you go into a church, you don't feel like sprinting. You want to pray. So, you know, the energy behind a place that was chaos and you know, who knows, planning death and destruction and all of those evil thoughts that happened, it's going to be hard to shake that. So it's a miracle you got any sleep at all, my friend.
Yes, you're right, darling. You're right. But this is the good news about Germany and Austria and those beautiful countries. They have the beds, even if they're like twin beds, they have them pushed together. So I was pretty much glued to John's side. I was like, if you wake me up, you better wake him up too.
Right. Right. And, you know, so anybody out there who's listening, you know, I'm not telling you not to take vacations into haunted places, but there is something to be said for those who are actually looking for activity. I have some friends who literally love going to the most haunted place in every town, and they prefer it if there's a seance at night. And I'm like, have fun with that.
Yeah,
I'll talk to you when you get back.
That's it. You know, I don't know about seances because they're like Ouija boards. You got to be careful what you wish, what you ask for.
Right.
And you got to know how to protect yourself for what you're inviting in.
Right.
But that's what I was going to say. If you go to places that are, you know, haunted history or whatever, mm-hmm. always remember you have power over it by just saying, protect me
right.
in the name of God, protect me.
Right.
So anything that might be there that is not on the up and up mm-hmm. will be afraid of you calling God into it and will not bother you. You know, I was just telling this to a client this morning because I said to them, remember, when a soul is when we die, mm-hmm. we immediately are confronted with choose God or don't choose God.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell people, remember, choose God on earth as it is in heaven. So choose God. Now, some souls don't choose God.
Right.
And those are the discarnate souls. They're the malevolent souls that are, they call them wandering earth, but they haven't chosen God. I don't know why that's on them. But I certainly know that exists, mm-hmm. and it exists in certain places in history. So, yes, it's absolutely true. There are places you can go where you want to hear something or see something. Just hang around. You'll find it.
Oh, they'll show up eventually. That's
exactly.
the truth. Oh, my goodness. You were recently on The Real Housewives in New Jersey, and it is rerunning and rerunning and rerunning. And I want to know, you know, so you're going to go there for Thanksgiving next year?
Well, I don't know. But one thing's for sure.
Yeah.
I want to say Melissa Gorga was extremely sweet to me.
That's so nice.
She's a lovely, lovely girl.
You rocked it, though. You rocked that episode.
Thank you. You know, I filmed it for 3 hours. They only put a 5-minute clip on.
Right.
They edited it down to that because it doesn't really fit in with the theme of things.
Right.
You know, the housewife shows is, let's say it's a little hectic or crazy. And mm-hmm. What I do is not hectic and not crazy. But they needed it for that moment because I went on to find out, you know, that they're pretty the biggest star on the show, I guess, is Teresa. Her mother had died. When I did the show, I had not really ever watched the show.
But so that's what's so perfect about it, because your reaction as it happened was so authentic and genuine, which is who you are. And that's why I adore you, because you are exactly who you are on camera. You are exactly that person off camera. There's not a switcheroo, like, uh-oh, the camera's rolling, let's put it on. I mean, you are just, you know, you got in the car when you came here to Chicago to speak at Chicago Ions, and, you know, it's like, my some daughter has a dead dog, and I don't have any coffee.
You are so right.
And
I gotta get my coffee. What was it?
Gotta get my coffee.
Oh my God! The way she said it, that's right. My daughter.
Dumb daughter has a dead dog, and I don't have any coffee.
That's it. I can't remember how she said. Oh my God, that was so funny.
But yes, and it's just you ooze authenticity, and that's why I want to.
I know what it was, Jen.
What?
Jessica said. The mother said, don't feed that dog the coffee. I mm-hmm. told you, don't feed that dog the coffee. What did she do? She fed the dog coffee. So now I got a dead dog, no coffee, and a dumb daughter.
Yes.
Something like that. Something like that. It was too funny.
Yeah, exactly. Do dead people watch you shower? Do dead people walk their dogs? Inside the Other Side, just a few of the offerings from Concetta Bertoldi. Her name spelled Concetta Bertoldi. Toldi, Bertoldi. She is awesome, and more to come from Concetta Bertoldi as we watch with bated breath as you continue on your journey. Thank you so much for being you.
Thank you, my darling. I love you with all my heart, Jen.
All my heart, too. If I could just talk like you could, then we would get somewhere. My son, Britt, actually now talks like Concetta. He says that he goes, Ma, where's the dog?
Oh my God, it's so funny because I said to him, he said that to me mm-hmm. about my accent when we were in the car. And I said, I have an accent.
Yeah.
You have an accent.
She says, I do not have any accent. I don't know what you're talking about. That's what you said. I adore you and your fabulous accent. And for everyone out there, check out Concetta Bertoldi and her website. And also just go order some of her books on Amazon or through her website, Concetta Bertoldi. As it's so hard for me to say it fast. ConcettaBertoldi.com. And also JenWeigel.com is where you can find me. For everyone listening, stay spiritual, treat others the way you'd like to be treated, and we will talk to you next time. I'm spiritual, damn it. I hope you are too.